Well, welcome to lesson number 9, metaphor, parable, story. These are all basic tenets of Ericksonian hypnosis. In fact, I think that Milton Erickson in the therapeutic community is probably regarded as much as a user of therapeutic metaphor as really any other technique. Let me begin with a story. This is from Leo Tolstoy. A bishop and several pilgrims are traveling on a fishing boat from Archangel to Slovetsk Monastery. During the voyage, the bishop engages the fishermen in conversation after overhearing them discuss a remote island nearby, their course, where three old hermits live a Spartan existence, focused on seeking salvation for their souls. Several of the fishermen claim to have seen them once. The bishop then informs the captain that he wishes to visit the island. The captain attempts to dissuade him by saying, "The old men are not worth your pains. I've heard it said that they are foolish old fellows who understand nothing and never speak a word." But the bishop insists, and the captain steers the ship towards the island and subsequently sets off in a rowboat to visit, where he is met ashore by three old hermits. The bishop informs the hermits he has heard of them and of their seeking salvation. He inquires how they are seeking salvation and serving God, but the hermits say they don't know, that they pray simply, "Three are ye, three are we, have mercy upon us." Subsequently, the bishop acknowledges that they have little knowledge. They have little knowledge, but they are ignorant of the true meaning of doctrine and how to properly pray. He tells them that he will teach them, not in a way of my own, but in a way in which God in the Holy Scriptures has commanded all men to pray to him, and proceeds to explain the doctrines of incarnation and the Trinity. He attempts to teach them the Lord's Prayer, the Our Father. But the simple hermits blunder and can't remember the words, which compels the bishop to repeat the lesson late into the night. After he becomes satisfied that they had memorized the prayer, the bishop departed from the island, leaving the hermits with the firm instruction to pray as he had taught them. The bishop then returned by the rowboat to the fisherman's vessel anchored offshore to continue the voyage. While on board, the captain notices their vessel is being followed, at first thinking a boat was behind them, but soon realizing that the three hermits had been running across the surface of the water as though it were dry land. The hermits catch up to the vessel as the captain stops the boat and informs the bishop, "We have forgotten your teaching, servant of God. As long as we kept repeating it, we remembered, but when we stopped saying it for a time, a word dropped out, and now it has all gone to pieces. We can remember nothing of it. Teach us again." The bishop was humbled. He replied to the hermits, basically, "Don't worry, your own prayer will reach the Lord, men of God. It's not for me to teach you. Pray for us." After which the hermits turned around and walked back to their island. Now, I've shared this classic story of the three hermits by Leo Tolstoy because, of course, there's a tremendous lesson here, and it is not only are there obviously subtle messages in here, but there are also, you know, overt messages, and that is, of course, primarily that there are many ways to pray to God. But the reason why I share that story is that storytelling catches a person's attention. It engages a person in a process. It takes them from the critical factor and the conscious mind to a subconscious place in the present. Story is used by Milton Erickson. Metaphor is used by Milton Erickson. Parable is used by Milton Erickson as a way of teaching our clients what it is that they need to know in order to make the significant changes that they came to our office for. Let me share with you a couple definitions. Of course, a story is an account of imaginary or real people and events. usually told for entertainment, but can be told for news or for other reasons as well. There's certainly characters in every story. There's the protagonist, the main character. This is the hero who the audience usually identifies with. The antagonist or the challenger, the conflict. There's also resolution in almost every story. Stories are usually about change, and that's why it is a great tool in hypnotherapy. Every story is about change. If there's no change to a story, then there's really no story. And so our clients relate, I think, specifically to storytelling in therapy because they also are embarked on a process of change. There's usually a theme or a moral. The message of the story is either explicit or implicit. That's a story. What's a metaphor? A metaphor is a comparison or analogy stated as equivalence, and a story can use a metaphor. You can tell a metaphorical story in its basic sense, so it's simply a comparison or analogy stated as equivalence. Road hog, couch potato, rug rat, those are all examples of metaphors. A parable. Anybody who studied any religion is familiar with the parables of Jesus, the parables of Buddha, the parables in just about every single religious tradition, Native American religions. A story or a short narrative designed to reveal allegorically some religious principle, moral lesson, psychological reality, or general truth. And of course, trance, that's what this training series is all about, is a state in which an internal perception has become more important than external perception, or in which a limited aspect of external perception has become so important as to preclude the rest of our external perception. That's really a pretty interesting, pretty good definition of trance. Therapy, of course, is any activity or interaction intended to bring about rehabilitation, social adjustment, or change. And this can be trance work, hypnotherapy, or traditional talk therapy as well. We have to remember that Milton Erickson was not only a hypnotherapist. He was a psychiatrist. He was a family therapist. And I saw the statistics once, and I was amazed. About half of his case studies that he had written about actually do not include any mention of hypnotic processes. Why tell a story or a metaphor in therapy? Well, they shift filters of perception. They have an unconscious meaning. That story of the three hermits is something I heard, I think, when I was a kid, probably. And yet I've always remembered that story. They have unconscious meaning. Even though I was reading that to you in this class, I was actually thinking of my grandmother, who had actually told me that story when I was a kid, who I learned very much from. Stories have unconscious meaning. They bypass conscious resistance. When I started sharing that story with you, chances are pretty good you set aside everything else to focus on what this story was all about. Story is a great way to conceal confrontation. If I were to say to my client, hey, you have that wrong, what you believe is simply not true, then I would be in a power struggle with my clients. But I can say to my client, I'd like to share a story with you. This is a story from Leo Tolstoy, or a story from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, or one of Milton Erickson's stories, and I can go on and tell the story, and it confronts the client indirectly rather than creating a power struggle in therapy. And we talked about relational frames in a previous lesson, something that ACT therapy certainly focuses on. ACT therapy is also known, like Ericksonian therapy, for its use of metaphor. Stories create relational frames, and they can be used to break unhealthy relational frames. A metaphor is kind of like a seed. By the way, this is a simile about a metaphor. A metaphor is like a seed. It plants an idea in our unconscious mind. It germinates in the subconscious mind and becomes an action in our conscious mind. Here are some examples of metaphor. Life is a journey. Purposes are destinations. Means are routes. Difficulties are obstacles. Counselors are guides. Achievements are landmarks in our life. Choices are crossroads that we face. A lifetime is a day. Death is sleep. A lifetime is a year. Death is winter. Life is a struggle. That's a metaphor. Dying is losing a contest against an adversary. Life is a precious possession. Death is a loss. Time is a thief. All linguistic patterns related, which are, in fact, metaphors. Milton Erickson, he told personal stories. He told one about his grandmother that I use with my weight loss clients. The reason why is I think that I probably have the same grandmother that Milton Erickson had. Not really, but it seems like it. In fact, you probably had this grandmother too. In fact, I'm going to share with you a story that's my adaptation of a story that Milton Erickson told his clients. I use this often with my weight loss clients. In fact, you can pretend that you're my weight loss client, and so you can close your eyes right here, right now, and you can listen to this story that I might tell to a client. When I was a kid, I used to help my grandmother with her garden. I always enjoyed watching my grandmother tend to her plants, which she did almost every day. And she loved to grow tomatoes. And as a little boy, I remember I would lay there on the earth next to my grandmother who was working in the garden. And she would plant the seeds. And each day I would go out and I would see the seeds germinate. And of course, as the weeks went by, begin to grow leaves and a vine and the little yellow flowers of the tomato plant. Soon those little flowers would give way to a small green bulb and eventually to bright red big tomatoes by the end of the summer. My grandmother, she would often prepare dinner, and before dinner she would slice those delicious, perfect tomatoes and she would serve them on a plate as an appetizer before our meal. It really was one of my favorite times of the year and one of my favorite memories as a kid. As a kid, I used to sit there and think about the tomatoes. You know, they never spoke to my grandmother. They never said thank you to my grandmother. They never talked to her at all. They never said, how much nutrition from the soil should we absorb? They never said to my grandmother, how much rain from the sky should we drink? Yet each summer, those tomatoes, as well as the other vegetables in my grandmother's garden, listened to themselves and became exactly the way they were supposed to be, intuitively knowing how much water from the sky to drink and how much nutrition from the soil to absorb. That is a story that I often tell my clients. It's a story that is personal. Milton Erickson told a fairly similar story. And of course, the explicit lesson here is that we probably don't even need a diet plan. We simply need to listen to our bodies. By the way, this story can be adapted to so many other clients, ranging from eating disorder clients to pain control clients, and really anybody who needs to learn to listen to their body. Milton Erickson told sometimes bizarre stories. There was a story he told to other doctors in his training about treating a farting Catholic patient. Bizarre and humorous stories. I'll give you the brief synopsis of that story so I don't leave you hanging and wonder what it's all about. In the complete works of Milton Erickson, or the collected works of Milton Erickson, is a case study where he shares a Catholic student. She actually has flatulence during class. She becomes humiliated and embarrassed, leaves the class, never returns, drops out of school. She's now isolated. She's so embarrassed and humiliated and unable to handle that, and so she becomes essentially agoraphobic. She writes to Milton Erickson and says, will you see me? I need help. And Milton Erickson says, yes. And she writes back and says, of course, this was long before emails, and says, yes, I do want to see you, but it has to be scheduled late at night. Nobody else can be there. And so he agreed to that, and she showed up. And so they talked about this humiliating and embarrassing experience, and she just continued to hold on to this old idea. And so Milton Erickson said to her, you're not really a very good Catholic, are you? And of course, she became almost offended by being accused of not being a very good Catholic, because she certainly was. In fact, that was probably all she had left at this point. And so he said to her, here's what I mean. And he grabbed his medical textbooks and he came over to the anatomy section and he showed the sphincter and the anus and the lower intestines and how it all works. He said, you don't believe in the Lord, do you? And she said, well, yes, I do. And he said, this is a device which holds gas, solid, and liquid. Gravity goes down, and yet, there's never any problems with this setup. He said, only God could make that work. And then he told her, continued his confrontation. And so you should celebrate the Lord. This was a great example of using a person's frame of reference, even though it may be entirely different than our frame of reference, to help them make changes. And he told her, you must celebrate the goodness of the Lord. And so feel free to go back to your house and to every time you have flatulence to praise God for the amazing, you know, abilities of the body and his perfect knowledge and wisdom and blah, 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 and dismissed her. And she wrote back, of course, saying that she had essentially reframed what farting was all about, and was now able to function again. And so this is an example of one of those bizarre interventions and bizarre stories of Milton Erickson, and so I thought I would include it here to let you know that really any kind of story, ranging from classic literature, Leo Tolstoy, to a personal story about your grandmother, to a bizarre story about a farting Catholic, can all become a part of a therapeutic process. Milton Erickson told stories to deepen trance. One of the best deepeners is to simply say to your client, let me share with you a story. As soon as you even say that, you are going to deepen trance. Now, a lot of people think, what if I don't have the story memorized? Let me share with you a quick tip on how to use stories that are written in your therapy session. You know, I think that it's perfectly okay for hypnotists to use scripts. They're great guides. I can't possibly remember everything that I need to tell every single client who I see during the day. And so if I'm going to read part of a script, or if I'm going to share a story from a book or a poem or something like that, what I will say to my client, I've done the induction, I've done the deepener, and I will simply say to them, and as you continue to relax, I'm going to share with you a few things from my notes. You might even hear me read from a book or from a story. And the reason why, of course, is I want to make sure that I cover everything that's important to you today. As soon as you tell your clients in trance that you're going to be reading from a book or from your notes, and the reason why is because you want to make sure everything that you cover that's important to them is covered today, they are appreciative of that. And so then I can open up the book, even if the book makes noise. And I can actually hold the book in my hand and I can literally read if I want to. Now, if you are going to read a script or a story or a book, make sure it's one that you have read before. Make sure it's one that you can read flawlessly with the right intonation, etc. Which is why I have some storybooks in my office that I use with clients. Corey Hammond's book, what's sometimes referred to as the Big Red Book, the Handbook of Hypnotic Suggestions and Metaphors. Those are marked up. They're yellow stickies in there, and they're highlighted. And the stories that I share are stories that I'm very familiar with. Milton Erickson shared wisdom in his stories. He told stories and metaphors to confront people. And he used stories and metaphor and parable as the mechanism for suggestive therapy. Now, as we look at the role of the storyteller and storytelling in culture, I think it informs us of some additional ways that storytelling can be used in therapy. In our culture, story is an act of magical creation. In our subconscious mind, it is the germinator of creative solutions. Storytelling is a way we transmit cultural wisdom from one person to another, the story of the Alamo, for example. And storytelling is a way for me to transmit my wisdom as a therapist, who's probably worked with other people with the same type of problem, to my clients. Stories and culture have a pervasive cultural and intergenerational life. And this is really cool because when we share a story with our client in therapy, chances are pretty good they're going to share that story with somebody else later on. So what we're really doing is we're not only helping the person who's in front of us, but we're probably helping others. Not only has Milton Erickson used storytelling, but certainly pastoral counseling and sermons. And remember, psychology's only been the queen of the social sciences for the last 100 years. For the previous 1,000 years, theology degrees were the queen of the social sciences. And as a result, much of our storytelling and therapeutic work does come in the context of religious belief. Carl Jung was another therapist who, at the time of Sigmund Freud, was an expert storyteller and understood the mystical power of the story. And anybody who studies Ericksonian therapy should probably study a little bit of Jungian therapy as well. They are different, but they certainly are interesting. And of course, Milton Erickson, which is the focus of our discussion, but ACT therapy, contextual psychology, draws heavily on metaphor and storytelling. And of course, 12-step groups are predicated on the story. Alcoholics Anonymous, everyone knows the 12 steps, but the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous has 164 pages at the beginning in section 1 that are dedicated to the 12 steps. There are another 300 and some pages that follow that, which are stories. And there are 12 stories in 3 sections. And storytelling has been a foundation of self-help movements as well. Why is a story therapeutic? What's the value? Well, a story causes a person to identify with something. We become the story that we're hearing. When I tell you the story about my grandmother, you're trying to figure out if you're me or my grandmother or if you're a tomato. If I tell you the story about the three hermits and the bishop and the fisherman captain, you're trying to figure out if you're the best supporting actor, the fisherman captain, or if you're the bishop, or if you're one of those hermits. So every time we hear a story, we try to see who it is subconsciously that we are in that story. Stories relate us to other people. It helps us to see outside of our own narcissistic tendencies and to how we impact and interact with the world around us. Stories are a way to help us to adapt to moral changes and moral beliefs. Perhaps I like the Leo Tolstoy story because it really stresses that what is sacred is not what is traditional, but what is heartfelt. And when we understand that concept, there can be a tremendous amount of freedom from some of the dogma and religious biases that seem to keep people from experiencing spiritual satisfaction in life. Stories teach self-control. They are really a curriculum. And they also provide vicarious experiences. You know, the hottest selling books right now seem to be those 50 Shades of Grey books. Well, I guarantee most people reading the 50 Shades of Grey books are not having nearly as much fun as the characters in those books. Why are they so popular? They're popular because story provides vicarious experiences and allows me to feel a whole range of human ideas and experiences. There are some cautions in therapeutic storytelling. I think it's important just to mention a couple things. One, if you're going to tell a story, be very familiar with the story. Make sure you know it. In fact, in some ways, have it committed to memory. We need to make sure that our stories are not so esoteric that they're not appropriate for the abstract reasoning skills of our clients. Telling a personal... I used to have a psychiatrist I worked with, and on his medical charts, when we would have a client who probably wasn't the smartest client of all, he would typically write in regards to their cognitive abilities, "Client is of average dull intelligence." I remember always sort of smirking and thinking that was a humorous way of a polite but humorous way of phrasing that. "Client is of average dull intelligence." If I have a client who is of average dull intelligence, maybe I'm going to share with them a story from my own personal experiences, because dull and average people seem to be able to relate to those. I'm probably not going to be sharing, you know, abstract reasoning from Aesop's fables, although they're usually pretty easy to understand, or, you know, from Leo Tolstoy or the parables of Buddha. I love the parables of Buddha. Most of you know that I do a fair amount of mindfulness-based stress reduction and training in mindfulness meditation. The parables of Buddha, I think, are particularly fascinating, but they are, you know, sometimes a little on the esoteric side, and I think that the abstract reasoning skills for my clients of average dull intelligence probably couldn't handle some of those things. I also think it's real important during storytelling not to break rapport. Tell a story the client can relate to. Consider that source, and don't get the details wrong in the story. There's nothing worse than going forward with a story and then realizing you're not telling it right and having to go back. It's kind of like, let me tell you a joke. Why did the chicken cross the road? Oh, wait a minute. Wait, he didn't cross the road. Hold on. Let me start over again. You know, or you tell the punchline first in a knock-knock joke. Knock-knock. Who's there? Aren't you glad I didn't say orange? Oh, I'm sorry. I was not supposed to do that. So we want to make sure that we're really familiar with these things and don't get the details wrong. As a therapist, where do you find stories? Well, in the collected works of Milton Erickson, there are a bunch of metaphors and stories that Milton Erickson told that are actually listed, and those are stories you can actually read to your clients. There's another book, I'm trying to think of it, Applications of Clinical Hypnosis by George Gaffner. I didn't mention that in our bibliography, but that is an excellent book. I will add it to the notes here. That's got some great stories in it as well. But you don't have to go to hypnosis textbooks to do this. You can borrow them from myth, from folktales, from movies, from drama. You can find stories in fables, parables, TV shows, history, life. The Chicken Soup for the Soul books, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, one of my favorite stories of all time is from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's about Jim the car salesman. Jim the car salesman used to own a car dealership, but because of his drinking, he loses ownership. And now that he's sober, he gets a job back as a salesman for the concern that he used to once own. And this is a story about his relapse. He believes one day that he can probably find a prospect for an automobile sale out in the country, and so he drives a demo car out into the country. Now, I know a lot of car salesmen who think a lot like Jim. In fact, this story has probably helped more people avoid relapse than probably any other story in the Big Book of AA. And so he's out in the country where he's hungry, and so he stops by a tavern because he's going to eat a sandwich. And out there, he believes, well, hey, I'm way out here in the middle of nowhere. No one's going to know I was having a drink. And if I only have one, it won't be a problem. And he believes, in fact, if I have a sandwich and a glass of milk, that'll coat my stomach and I won't have any ill effects. So he orders a sandwich, a milk, and a whiskey. He downs the sandwich, he downs the milk, he downs the whiskey. That works out so well that he decides he'll have another sandwich, another milk, and another whiskey. And that works out so well that he decides to have another. But he's already eaten two sandwiches, and so he just has milk and whiskey. Milk to coat the stomach. But of course, milk and whiskey are a lousy combination, so eventually by the time it comes to the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh shot, he skips the milk and just has the whiskey, finding himself, of course, exactly back where he started in the sobriety process. Tons of people who have heard the stories of Jim and recognize their own cognitive errors, the things they believe to be true that are not true. That's what a cognitive error is. And this story is really one of my favorite stories, and it's a story that has lots of applications, even to clients who are not alcoholics. Really any client struggling with doing the same thing over again, expecting different results. A story doesn't have to be true. It doesn't have to be told perfectly. I did not tell you the farting Catholic story the way Milton Erickson wrote it in the book. As I was deciding to share that story, I looked around and realized the book was not within arm's reach. So rather than pausing, I simply told you the story. And yet, the story came out okay. That's an unusual set of word choices to use in relation to that story, though. The story came out okay. Stories can come really from your client. They can be metaphorical suggestions that they give us. We can even share jokes or poetry. There are really several steps to telling a good story, and in formal trance, we're probably not going to worry too much about eye contact because their eyes are probably closed. But I tell stories as part of my pre-talk and as informal suggestion all the time. In fact, sometimes when I'm done with a session, I'll recognize there are some additional suggestions I might like to make. And so I might choose to tell them a story at the end of my session. And eye contact is important. Eye contact should not be like a threatening dog, where it is unrelenting, but where we make eye contact to really appropriately communicate, this is for you. It's one more way of facilitating that belly button to belly button communication. In storytelling, we can use the voice as an instrument, rhythm, cadence, tonality, punctuation, the use of silence. To be a good storyteller and metaphor user, enjoy stories, collect stories. Go to Google and type an inspirational story for whatever problem you're facing or your client is facing, and you'll find some inspirational stories. Structure a story, if it's a story that comes from your own experience, with a conflict and a resolution, or a law of three points to make. Show, don't tell, a story. Try to use sensorial descriptions. That's what makes a good story. It involves all of our auditory, kinesthetic, and visual experiences, even our gustatory and olfactory. Assign meaning to stories, either explicit or implicit, and adapt and improvise stories according to the client that we're working with and their purpose. There are, of course, two exercises at the end of this lesson, and I hope that this lesson has been enjoyable to you. The first is to think of your favorite childhood stories. For me, there was a children's book called The Cat from Telegraph Hill. In fact, it was my favorite book, and I ended up buying a used copy on eBay, and I actually made a recording that I posted on YouTube, so I'll put a link to that story. It was one of my favorite stories. Think about the stories you enjoyed as a kid, and then ask yourself, can I adapt this story for a therapeutic purpose? And then begin using that story either in conversational hypnosis or formal trance as a teaching tool. Exercise 2. Go to the bookstore or to the library. Seek out a book with stories, parables, metaphors, or poems. Identify two or three that you think it would be valued to share with a client. Make a photocopy of them or bring the book to your office and begin utilize stories, parables, metaphors as part of your hypnotherapy processes.